morning, and we'll open a public hearing on House Bill 2514. Janet, can you give us a rundown on the bill?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. House Bill 2514 would expand the offense of reckless driving to include driving at a speed more than 30 miles over a designated speed limit or a posted speed. The offense, reckless driving, is a Class A misdemeanor punishable by a maximum of 1 year imprisonment, $5,000 fine, or both. The bill does provide an exception for the operation of an emergency vehicle. Currently, driving more than 30 miles over the speed limit is a Class A traffic violation punishable by a maximum fine of $600. House Bill 2514 would classify such a violation as a misdemeanor, adding it to the reckless driving statute 811-140. The new reckless driving classification would apply in basic rule as well as speed limit situations. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Janet. Could I have Kelly Sky? Oh, excuse me, Kelly. Cruz, Representative Cruz. You can just, if you would please. And then I'd open a public hearing on House Bill 2518, so we'll get both of them in one fell shot.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, Jeff Cruz, State Representative, District 7. And I apologize for being a few minutes late. I had to gavel my own committee in first and get a public hearing going there. First, let me kind of give you a history on these two bills. They were both filed last session, and both passed out of the House Transportation Committee and got sent to Ways and Means, theoretically, as a way to keep them alive, because at that point in time there were some interesting things happening in the Senate Transportation Committee with the removal of the chair and a few other things like that. Part of the reason for this, and I guess I would maybe even hold off on one of them, was the fact that last session and this session both, there are multiple bills dealing with the concept of raising the speed limit or allowing the department to raise the speed limit. And that's speaking specifically to 2518, which would make Oregon a speed limit state. Now, I know the governor has got a similar bill in to make us a speed limit state. I think the difference between his and mine is mine still keeps basic rule in play. And I think that's important from the perspective of, to have a speed limit is fine, but when you have adverse driving conditions, it would be a nice tool for law enforcement to be able to cite. For, let's say we have a road that's 65 mph and it's foggy and icy and all this stuff. 65 is probably not a reasonable safe speed, and so this bill would allow for that. The concept behind this is, clearly on I-5, probably the average speed or the speed that a huge portion of the traffic is going is close to 75 anyway. And my thought behind this was, if we still are operating under the same dynamic, if we increase the speed to 75, we don't want people doing 85. And 75 may be a reasonable and safe speed. So this would, with basic rule, there has to be flexibility in what people are cited for and at what speed they're cited. If indeed we went to 75 on some roads, if we were speed limit state, that would allow people to be cited for doing 76. If we stay basic rule, we go to 75, then it still remains arbitrary. So I think this would be a good bill to come into play if indeed we gave the department the ability to set posted speeds above what they currently have posted. And it turned out to be a slightly longer bill than I thought, but that's getting into the fact that where the speeds aren't posted, it sets a limit, and I think that's appropriate. So that's basically the genesis of that bill. And since how we've opened on both, the other one, and I do have a potential amendment, which I'll give the committee staff, and by inconvenience make copies. Was the other one on reckless driving? I have handed the committee staff some amendments that actually may do a better job of getting at the objective of this bill, because currently, for example, on Interstate 5, if you're doing 90 or you're doing 120, it's the same violation, it's the same fine, and that doesn't make any sense to me. And so the concept was, in talking to some troopers, they also told me that reckless driving is a hard statute to arrive at as far as going to court. And so the thought was of putting another layer of fine inside what currently exists. And what I gave to staff is a more defined fine schedule that does not actually approach reckless driving. Reckless driving pretty much stays what it is, but it puts in a whole other layer of fines. For example, what it would say is 1 to 10 miles an hour is Class D traffic violation, 11 to 20 is a Class C, 21 to 30 is a Class B, 30 to 35 would be a Class A infraction, and over 35 would be a Class C misdemeanor. And it still leaves reckless driving as it currently is in law and in statute, and still leaves that as a viable way to get to, but doesn't tie it to a specific speed. But this puts, I think, a better set of gradations in the fine structure that we're allowed to assess folks, because you go down in Southern Oregon and you'll see people doing 110, 120 miles an hour on the freeway all the time, and it just doesn't seem reasonable to me that would be the same fine as somebody doing 30 miles an hour or less who's still breaking the speed limit. So that's the history and the genesis of these, and these amendments were sent to me by a trooper from OSP who thought this would be a better system. I looked at it, and I thought that indeed he may have a better idea than I did. So those are the bills, and I would answer any questions.
Thank you, Representative. Any questions? Representative
Mr. Chair, Representative, last time we ran a bill that went through both, I think, the House and Senate, and the governor vetoed it. Was 70 mile an hour speed limit, and the question, I guess, was the truck speed that was the difference mm-hmm. between truck speed, and why don't we run that same type of bill?
Mr. Chair, Representative Zahner, I know that Representative Miller has a speed limit bill in, and several other people do. Okay. I'm assuming they are property of this committee, and you would have the ability to make any adjustments there that you would need.
Okay, thanks.
Representative Greenlund.
Thank you, sir. Hi.
Hi.
I was just a little curious, and the Dash 1 amendments may take care of it, why emergency vehicles were excluded specifically.
Mr. Chair, Representative Greenlund, when I dropped this bill 2 years ago, state police came to me and said that they liked the concept, but they had a problem, and that would be that if they're in hot pursuit or responding to emergency, they would be breaking the law, and that wasn't what I was after. So I thought it was appropriate to let them use whatever means necessary to accomplish their job without breaking the law.
Is that still in there, or is that gone?
That would still be in the new bill with the amendments. The amendments just deal with, the exclusion of emergency vehicles would still be part of the amended bill.
I wonder if we could get specific about excluding police in hot pursuit. I'm not really convinced we want fire trucks and ambulances to be going 30 miles over the speed limit.
Mr. Chair, Representative Greenlick, if my house is on fire, I want the fire truck to go just as damn fast as they can to get there.
Yeah, but except that
And in most cases, I mean, you know, the one thing we experience here at the Capitol is probably more emergency vehicles than any other street probably on the planet. I'm trying to remember a day when we didn't hear sirens going past this building, simply because we have a hospital and a police station and a fire station close. I guess I would not want to do anything that would in any way tie the hands of emergency vehicles and personnel in the course of doing their duty. These folks aren't joyriding. They're responding to emergencies.
Thank you, sir.
Any other questions? Thank you, Representative.
Thank you very much.
Now could I have Kelly Skye, please? And Committee Kelly will be testifying to House Bill 2514.
Good morning, Chair Brown, members of the committee. My name is Kelly Skye, and I am a legislative representative for the Oregon Criminal Defense Lawyers Association, and we oppose this bill for a number of reasons. And I think that many of them are addressed by the amendments that were proposed this morning. I spoke just prior to this hearing with Jim Butt-Wimmis. Excuse me if I mispronounce the name, from the Oregon State Police, and we had many similar concerns. Placing this provision of within the reckless driving statute seems to be an inappropriate place to put it, and there are a number of reasons why. First of all, if someone drives over 30 miles an hour over the speed limit, that conduct, if it is reckless, is already punishable under the reckless driving statute. So it's unnecessary to actually place it in there. Second of all, there could be circumstances in which somebody drives 30 miles an hour over the speed limit that may not be deemed reckless. And in attempting to create a strict liability crime, as the proponent has done with the bill unamended, they're trying to make it, as a matter of law, reckless driving when you go over 30 miles an hour over the speed limit. But they haven't done that because they've placed it in a reckless statute, a statute that requires a reckless state of mind. So in my written testimony, I've explained how this will invite confusion. There has been a lot of litigation in areas such as this where the court will actually read into a strict liability statute a mental state, a requirement that there be criminal negligence, recklessness, knowing conduct, or intentional conduct. In this situation, you've written into a reckless statute something that does not require a state of mind. There's also a concern that if you put into the reckless driving statute 30 miles an hour over the speed limit constitutes reckless driving, you've thereby made a legislative indication that driving perhaps 25 miles an hour over the speed limit may not be reckless driving. So you've given an indication, or you've taken away a possibility of prosecuting somebody who may have been driving very recklessly at 25 miles an hour over the speed limit through a school zone or during a time when there's a lot of traffic and hazardous road conditions. That may very well constitute reckless driving, and you are accepting that from prosecution under the reckless driving statute. I have not seen the amendments, but in talking to the proponent of the amendments, I think that they probably address my concerns. The one last concern that I want to mention is that once the legislature takes on the task of defining what we deem to be reckless driving, you are opening the floodgates, basically, for everyone to come in here and say, well, this circumstance constitutes reckless driving and you should put it in the statute. Well, this circumstance constitutes reckless driving. And then you take a statute which is broad and allows the prosecutor's office and the judges and juries to determine what we think is reckless driving, and you start parsing out little bits of conduct. And the list is endless. We can all think of an endless list of conduct that creates that constitutes reckless driving. So the Criminal Defense Lawyers Association thinks that's a road that the legislature should not go down, and I think that these amendments will will take care of that.
Thank you, Kelly. Is there any questions?
Representative Zahner. Thank you, Mr. Chair. So right now, if you're driving 30 miles an hour, more than the speed limit, and driving sane, it's classed as reckless driving, or...
Well, not necessarily.
Yeah, so is he trying to tie reckless driving to the fact that you are 30 miles an hour more?
Right. He's trying to say that as a matter of law, that is reckless driving, whereas right now, what has to happen is the state would allege that you were driving in a reckless manner, and they would have to prove that your driving created a substantial risk of harm to another person. Now, it may be that driving 30 miles an hour over the speed limit under those particular circumstances constitutes reckless driving. It also may be that it doesn't. It just depends. You can imagine a rural scene where it's 6 o'clock in the morning, it's light, it's dry, there's nobody else on the road, that perhaps driving 30 miles an hour over the speed limit might not constitute reckless driving, whereas certainly within a city, it's a different circumstance. And reckless driving allows prosecutors to determine, at the first level, police officers to determine what they deem to be reckless driving, and prosecutors to follow that up with issuing a charge, and judges and juries to apply the specific circumstances at the time the person was driving, apply the law to that and determine whether it's reckless driving. And it certainly can be prosecuted that way now. It doesn't have to be.
Follow up?
Follow up.
Sure. You also mentioned that it would exempt somebody from reckless driving if they weren't doing 70 miles an hour. You mean if someone's driving recklessly and at 45 and this law is in effect, that they would be exempt? Or you'd still arrest them for reckless driving?
It doesn't create an actual exemption, but you can. The way the courts and lawyers practicing in the criminal arena interpret statutes is they try to look at what the legislature is indicating. And so when the legislature sets a 30-mile-an-hour over 30 miles an hour over the speed limit as your bright line, this constitutes reckless driving, then there certainly is an argument that anything under that does not constitute reckless driving, because you have spoken to 30 miles and above, but you have not spoken to anything below that. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. One more final.
Follow.
Would this cut down jury trials if if you had a fixed limit, speed limit, whether it's that he's trying to do or 75 miles an hour, takes out that gray area? Would it cut down time that we spend in the courtrooms arguing back and forth between lawyers or not?
Representative Zahner, I'm not really sure that it would. And part of that is because the way the criminal code is structured is that it actually requires a mental state, as I was talking earlier. And so the immediate reaction to this, drawing this bright line, is there's going to be considerable amount of litigation as to whether the state still needs to prove that it was reckless, okay? And we've seen a lot of this litigation in the past on the driving while suspended statute, because that does not have a mental state. You don't have to know that you're suspended. But that has been declared to be a strict liability statute for a lot of reasons. Similarly, the driving under the influence of intoxicants statute is a strict liability, meaning they do not have to prove a culpable mental state. Just about all of the crimes in the criminal code require a mental state. And by inserting this provision into the reckless driving statute, you are suggesting that there is a reckless state of mind. And that's where I think there's going to be confusion and litigation. I know there will be litigation, because I did the research this weekend and read all the cases. Anytime the legislature passes a new criminal provision that does not provide a culpable mental state, the courts will look at it and determine whether it requires a culpable mental state. And I think that if you take it out of the reckless driving statute and put it into a separate provision, as I believe these amendments do, that you solve that litigation problem, and yes, you probably will reduce the amount of litigation surrounding.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Kelly Janner had a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Under Representative Cruz's amendment, the sub D at the near the top, but sub D, he's proposing to amend a new section into the regular driving speeding statutes to say that exceeding 95 miles an hour is a class C misdemeanor. So that wouldn't put it into the reckless driving, but make it a crime. What would be involved with that?
Again, you are going to come up against the mental state requirement, because that does not include one. The court will look at this and try to determine whether the person needs to know that they're driving 95 miles an hour. The court basically says if you're going to take something that is otherwise innocent conduct and make it criminal, then you need to require a culpable mental state. The person has to know what they're doing, or they have to be acting in a reckless manner, or the lowest level is a criminal negligence standard. Now, if the legislature makes a clear indication that they do not intend for the state to have to prove a culpable mental state, then it becomes what's called a strict liability crime. You do it, you're guilty. Here, because you're putting it in with the other speeding provisions which do not require mental states, you may be making that clear legislative indication. Although I have to say that this probably will go to the Court of Appeals, and there will be someone who will argue that you have to know you're going 95 miles an hour in order to be guilty of it. And I can't tell you exactly how that would come out unless you put an actual provision in that subsection D that said, regardless of whether the person knows, you know, is aware of the fact that they're going 95 miles an hour, exceeding 95 miles an hour is a Class C misdemeanor. That is a clear legislative intent, and that will take care of the litigation along those lines. But this is a much safer place to put it in the code than in the reckless driving statute.
Thank you. Is there any other questions? Thank you, Dylan.
Thank you so much.
Could I have Jim Bodwanis, please?
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Jim Botwinis. I'm the president of the Oregon State Police Officers Association. Based on Representative Cruz's testimony this morning, we were kind of actually happy to hear that because we opposed the bill in the format that it was. We certainly respect and appreciate the fact that he believes that operators of vehicles who drive at excessive speeds ought to have some kind of punishment that's higher than what it is now. Which is a Class A traffic infraction. The problem is we take a very good statute, realistically, reckless driving, and we basically put a component of speed only into it, and it dilutes a reckless driving statute down to something, I think, than what it was originally intended to be, which was somebody who committed some pretty serious offenses, more than just speed. That doesn't mean that speed is not sometimes used as a sole component or a part of the component to reckless driving, but there's generally other components that go with that, not just the speed in and of itself. So our recommendation was the same, I believe, as the amendments that were submitted, which was to amend the language in A11190, which spells out what the violations are for the various levels of speed. And our scenario was in the 1 to 10 to change it from a D to a C infraction, 11 to 20 from a C to a B, 21 to 30 from a B to an A, and 31 or over would be changed to a C misdemeanor. Now, part of the reason behind changing this to a misdemeanor over just an infraction is we will have troops who routinely will stop somebody for 9,500, 100, 510 miles an hour, and they don't go down the road very far, and they're nabbed for doing the same thing again. Those people obviously have almost a reckless disregard for the law, and they need to be gotten off the highway. And you cannot do that under an infraction. With a C misdemeanor, you could at least arrest that person, take them to jail, and make them think a little bit about what it is that they were doing out there driving that kind of a speed. So if you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
Any questions? Don't look like there is, Jim. Thank you. Well, committee will get that amendment taken care of, and then we'll have a second hearing on this end to get a better understanding of where we're going with this.
Can we do that? We might want to take into account that language to make sure it is what we said.
Right. Well, I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2514 and help me with the pronunciation of that name. Is it Frederick Hopkinson? Okay. We got fairly close. Good morning, sir.
Chairman Brown and committee, I'm Frederick Hakkinen, physician internist at Meridian Park Hospital. I work with Dr. Tung as well, and I'd like to make just some brief comments about speed, and basically goes along with what we've just been talking about, plus 2501. I was a medical officer in Germany for 3 years and had the opportunity to see the carnage on the autobahns in Germany that were there because of speed. And I'd like to suggest that our freeways in this country are not designed for the speeds that we're talking about. Whenever I drove up to my wife's parents up in Denmark, it was 635 kilometers, which is exactly about 400 miles, and I would never fail to see at least 2 to 4 bodies each direction being put into body bags or still smashed into their cars. This let me look at things a little bit more closely, and I found that, number one, the autobahns in Germany are designed for speed, but they have wide lanes and wide shoulders. And as I was taught by my father, there's always a place to look to get out of the situation that you might be getting into. Our freeways are not designed for that type of speed. Very rarely do we have good roadbeds, and very rarely do we have adequate shoulders for that type of thing. The only other thing that I would mention is that the biggest problem with speed is to be able to safely drive at a given speed. And in, with the with that has just been spoken to, you have to. Oregon has the 2-second rule. My father taught me the 1 car length for every 10 mile an hour rule. And in order to drive from Portland to Salem, for example, at 70 or 60 or 70 or whatever, you have to stay anywhere from 6 to 8 car lengths behind the car in front of you. That's not possible even with 3 lanes for the most part. So what we're doing, if we raise our speed limit and not have good fines against those speeds, we're going to find people that are going to be driving more recklessly and that are unable to stop in order in time to avoid an accident. There are a lot of other things that go into my concerns about Oregon and its roads, but a lot of those are Department of Transportation problems that need to do with better roadbeds and things like that. But that's about all I really had to say. Dr. Tung is going to bring up more on 2501.
Thank you, sir. Is there any questions?
I'm on first today. I drove the Autobahn. Boy, and I tell you, you got to pay attention when you're driving on that thing. But the difference is, you know, you're aware of that when you pull out, you're going to pass quick and get back in because you got guys flying, or guys and gals, and blinking the lights. And I'd do about 70 in my little Volkswagen or whatever we rented, and I'd try to get around the car, and man, some guy would be flying by. I guess what I'm saying is it was a change of speed that I was most concerned with, the fact that I was going so slow and they were going so fast. If we'd have both only been maybe going 10 or 15 miles an hour difference from each other, I don't think we'd have had the carnage and the problem that you talk about.
I appreciate your concern, and I think the difference is that the Autobahn speed at the time I was in Germany was unlimited.
Yeah.
They've since limited it to 130 kilometers, which is about 85 miles an hour.
Oh, okay.
Unfortunately, people can still drive any speed they want, and unfortunately, truck and bus traffic is limited to 80 kilometers, which is 50 miles an hour. Mm. So if you have traffic going in one direction and one truck is doing 49, The truck behind him obviously wants to pass. And when you pull out into a lane where there's a Mercedes doing 150 miles an hour, the reaction time for those people behind him is just unbelievably short. And that's where I saw the accidents.
Do you think there's more accidents now because they put a speed limit on it than it was before when I drove it about 15 years ago?
There are fewer accidents. Last time I was in Germany about a year and a half ago, I actually was able to drive the entire same 634 kilometers without seeing a single body. And I thought that was a victory for somebody.
A real thrill to drive that. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Any other questions? Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Could I have Bob Russell come forward, please? Let's see, Bob. Oh, there he is. He's fine. Yeah, wait. Janet, will you, I forgot to ask for some comments. Will you please tell us about the bill?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We've switched from the reckless driving bill to the House Bill 2518, which creates the offense of violating a maximum speed limit and converts existing basic rules, statutory and posted speed limits to maximum speed limits. Speeds are governed in Oregon by basic rule. My understanding of what Representative Cruz said was that you would still have basic rule speeds for below the speed limit, but above the speed limit, if you're going 76 miles an hour, you wouldn't apply basic rule. You would apply the statutory speed limit. So that would convert speed limits above or speeds above the basic statutory speeds to speed limits, and they would not be basic rule. So, and also...
Go ahead, Mom, please.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Bob Russell. I'm president of the Oregon Trucking Associations. And with your indulgence, I would actually like to address my comments to both 2518 and 2501. Both bills give the Department of Transportation the ability to increase or decrease speeds as they determine to be reasonable and safe. We take no position regarding the different approaches that are taken in these two bills, and quite frankly, we don't take a position on either bills. Our concern is exactly Representative Zahner's concern, is the differential. All of the studies that we have seen indicate that if the differential between cars and trucks is greater than 5 miles an hour, it dramatically increases the incidence of cars rear-ending or sideswiping trucks. The Federal Highway Administration has indicated in their studies that when a differential exists, it is four times more likely that a car will hit a truck. The statistics, however, indicate that there's no increase in accident rates if the differential is 5 miles an hour or less. We also would advocate that the maximum truck speed be 65 miles an hour. We don't believe that anything over that, and some states are over that, is safe. So our position is trucks no more than 65 miles an hour, and it could be less, with a differential of no more than 5 miles an hour between cars and trucks. In 2001, then Senator Miller introduced Senate Bill 502, which was eventually passed by the legislature, and it was amended to provide for maximum speed for trucks of 65, maximum speed for cars of 70 miles an hour. However, that measure was unsigned and disapproved by Governor Kitzhaber at the time. So, and the Oregon Trucking Associations is respectfully asking you that if you do pass a speed bill, and we're not suggesting that you do, but if you do, that you make sure the maximum speed for trucks is 65 miles an hour on rural interstates, and that the differential is no more than 5 miles an hour between cars and trucks. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Bob. Any questions? Representative Ningfelder.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thanks, Bob. I have a question regarding, I realize that you're not advocating for a 10-mile-an-hour increase, but the question I had is if the speed limit was raised 10 miles an hour, what is the differential in the fuel efficiency for most trucks? I mean, does that basically, I don't know if you've figured this out, but how, given the price of gas these days, I would think that that would be a huge cost increase.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Dingfelder, it's difficult to calculate because there's so many different engines out there and they're operating in different environments. Now, certainly there would be an increase in fuel consumption if we increase the speed by 10 miles an hour. However, it's not substantial.
Thank you.
Representative Ryan.
Thank you. Bob, since our speed limits now have the 10-mile-an-hour differential, don't they?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Beyer, that's correct.
Mm-hmm. And you have never come forward trying to adjust that. Is it just because everybody's used to it, it's not so bad, or?
No. Mr. Chairman, Representative Beyer, if we came forward and asked to address that, then every speed limit sign in Oregon would have to be changed. The fiscal impact of doing that would be significant. So we have not asked that that be changed under the current law. What we are asking is if you change it, which would then require the change in signs, that then you adopt our policy of no more than 5 miles an hour.
Thank you.
Okay. Any other questions? Thank you, Bob. Committee, I'm going to open a public hearing on 2501 also. Create a great deal more confusion, I suppose.
Yeah.
And could I have Representative Miller and Senator George come forward, please? Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, State Representative Randy Miller from District 37 here to speak on behalf of House Bill 2501. I do appreciate the time that this committee is giving to this bill, and I want to tell you that on my drive here this morning, I conducted an experiment. And I commute every day from the West Lynn area on 205 out to I-5 and then head south. I set the cruise control I have on my vehicle at 65 miles per hour. I want you to know that I passed 2 trucks. I passed zero cars. None. That should give you some indication that the statistics that we keep are close to accurate when they indicate that most Oregonians routinely ignore the posted speed of 65 miles per hour. There's a lesson there. But let me talk about what House Bill 2501 actually does. It is a bill that is typically misrepresented by the media, in that it suggests that you all, with your vote to support this bill, will raise the speed limit to 75 miles per hour. That isn't what you'd be doing. You would simply be investing the authority to make such a decision into the Department of Transportation. And they could only adjust speeds up, or as is included in this bill, down, after they have received testimony from groups concerned with traffic safety, with local jurisdictions where a stretch of road might travel through, and we know of those spots like down where the Grand Ronde and so forth, they don't want it to be above the posted number of 55 currently. I don't think the department would sanction that, listening to testimony. They would hear from the state police, who may or may not represent that they have adequate forces to patrol. But again, it's not a decision that is mandatory. It would simply make the change permissive. And that's an important distinction. Again, lost on many who are detractors of this bill, who want to conveniently say that you're going to leap another 10 miles per hour and perhaps catch up with the safe driving behavior of our citizens. But that isn't what this bill does. The results of my survey, I'm sure, are not inconsistent with your own findings. Those of you who've been on our freeways any time recently understand that people disrespect this particular posting. Now, you should also know that all but 2 states west of the Mississippi River have increased their speeds since the repeal of the federal maximum to something above 65. Oregon and Iowa are the only 2 states that are stuck in this 65 territory, and without much reason. You know, you will hear, I'm sure, today a lot of statistics. And as you know, we can all manufacture some statistical reason to support our cause. But the fact is that traffic fatalities have continued to decline, quite frankly, over the past several years, as our average speeds on our freeways have increased. I'm not here to suggest to you that you create the I-5 Autobahn. We're not prepared for that. But what I am here to tell you is that if you measure these things in vehicle miles traveled, you will find that the number of crashes and the number of fatalities continue to decline. Some of that is a direct relation to our support in this state of seatbelt usage, something that I supported as a legislator. It is also a recognition that we're doing better with respect to our respect for drinking and driving, and saying that that is not an acceptable behavior. Legislation I have supported in the past and was pleased to be a part of supporting another package just last week. But what I hope to suggest by saying that is that I do support reasonable restraints on our citizens. I want to give you a very practical understanding of this proposal as well. If any of you have driven around our state with your son or daughter, and you're out there on the freeway, and your son or daughter looks over on your odometer and says, Dad, how fast are you traveling? And you look down there in that odometer and it says, well, we're going with the flow. Yes, Dad, how fast is that? Well, that's about 71 and a half here in this particular stretch. Oh, well, how come you're doing that? Because the maximum is 65. Well, I've decided not to obey that particular law. To which your son or daughter could say, well, you know, Dad, you guys have passed a lot of laws that deal with drugs and alcohol, and would it be okay if I decided to disobey those? You know, what we need to do in this process, frankly, is develop laws that have the respect of our citizens. And when they are so disconnected, as is in the case of this law, why do we maintain it? Why do we maintain this fantasy that somehow this posted speed has been the reason we've had fewer accidents? It's not related, because it's not real. That isn't the behavior. The behavior is 71 and plus out there, and people are not endangering themselves. I don't think we help ourselves in this process. I don't think we help breed respect for law enforcement. Ask yourselves this question. If you were on the freeway today, even on this kind of cloudy gray day, and you got pulled over going 71 miles an hour and cited as you could be, how would you feel about that? Would you have the reaction that most Oregonians would have? Doesn't this person have something better to do? What are they doing stopping me when I'm just going with the rest of them? That's exactly the reaction Oregonians would rightfully have. Now, again, you're going to hear people who come up with their statistics and tell us that if we increase this speed limit, it's going to be incredible carnage out there. Well, this bill of goods has been attempted before, and the legislature in the past two sessions has rightly disregarded that information and passed the bills twice. Now, it did meet, unfortunately, an unreasonable objection from our last governor, but I'm very confident that our current governor is a little bit more attached to reality and would sign this bill. So I ask you to consider that you're not wasting your time on pursuing this matter. It will become law. With respect to the statistics, let me just tell you that I will grant you, I will stipulate, as those lawyer types say, that objects in motion, when they collide, will do more damage than stationary objects. I concede that point. Because stationary objects don't collide. So what you're arguing about is, how fast are you going to allow those objects to move? Now, if it's okay for almost every other state west of the Mississippi to authorize 70 and 75 miles per hour, what's so unique about Oregon? Why is it so dangerous here? The fact is, it isn't. And the fact is, this bill simply says to the Department of Transportation, if there is some stretch out there in I-84, close to Arlington, that it'd be just okay to drive 70 miles per hour, which is one of their options, then maybe they could post that sign, again, reflecting the reasonable and safe behavior of our citizens. This is long overdue. I hope this committee will take it up positively and send it to the floor, where I will once again ask members to simply vote consistent with their own behavior. If that happens, this bill passes with a very large number of votes. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Representative. Senator George.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. My name is State Senator Gary George. I basically represent the West Valley, the west side of the Willamette Valley. And I have would like to tell you that ever since I've been in this building up until this year, I've served on the Transportation Committee. And we've heard all of the debate. We've also dealt with the reality, and the reality is that people in certain highways are driving over 65. In fact, if I remember right, Representative Miller made mention of it, is that there's somewhere over 71 miles an hour average. And if you're out on the section, say from Wilsonville to Salem, I can guarantee you that the trucks are doing 71 miles an hour. And I would also like to let you know that I'm a CDL licensed truck driver, and I have been out on that interstate all the way from here to Southern California and back many times. And I can tell you that no one is respecting this law. And there's a reason for that. When it was 55 and the numbers of fatalities were extremely high, one of the reasons is that people become very lackadaisical, very calm, and sometimes fall asleep at a very low speed going long distance. And if you look at the size of our state compared to other places in this nation, this is a large state. We're 62-plus million acres. It's a long ways from here to Ontario. And there are places out here in this state where in fact, you're going to find people driving substantially above, on an average basis, 71 miles an hour. And you're also going to find trucks doing substantially over 55, more like 75. Now, you can say, well, all right, well, we need to get more enforcement out there to bring them down. I'm going to tell you, that really won't work. Because one of the things that we've heard over the years and things that I've read is that built into everyone's computer in the top of their head is the idea of a certain reasonable speed. And our basic law, as Janet pointed out, is based upon a premise that you have a decision-making responsibility, and that is to drive safely. The interesting thing is I've seen the studies that have been done on this issue. If you have a nice, say, a six-lane highway with wide lanes, and then you narrow those lanes just slightly, people automatically slow down. When you go into the Twilliger curve, nobody has to post a sign that says slow down. You just don't like the curve that's in the Twilliger curve, and so you slow down. Now, the point of it is that we all make those decisions. Now, there's a few folks that don't operate quite so rationally. Those are the guys you target. But the rest of us will make a reasonable decision. But this bill, House Bill 2501, that I'm supporting here today, it doesn't even ask that we make the decision. It asks that ODOT will make a decision relative to the trucking industry. Do we want it 5 or 10 miles an hour differential between trucks and cars? Is the highway adequate for this type of driving? If you guys will travel with me, we're going to go from Wilsonville to Salem again. And if you'll notice the work that we did out there a few years ago, and we added actually 4 additional lanes, if you'll notice out there on that highway, that's 4 additional full lane widths that are now the emergency lanes, okay? And we have standard U.S. standards for the width of that road. And everyone drives at a certain speed. Now, I want you to go south of here with me. We're on our way to Eugene. And you'll notice out there that's only 4 lanes, and most of the area for emergency lane is a little bit more narrow than it is up here because we haven't finished that highway the way we should, as we have done it between Wilsonville and Salem. So what do you notice when you're out there? You will notice, first of all, there's more cars per mile, but you're also going to notice that people drive slower. Trucks go slower, cars go slower, because people are making a decision about what is a safe speed on this highway. What I'm saying to you is a combination of rational, reasonable people driving cars and trucks and rational, reasonable experts inside of ODOT will make this decision for us. But we do need to deal with the idea that we haven't dealt with the reality of what people are doing. Now, the history of our country has been based on a lot of law change based on civil disobedience. And I'm not suggesting that's what's happening here. But the very fact that if you look at the condition of the road surface of Oregon, if you look at Texas Transportation Institute and others who rate the highway surface, Oregon roads are actually in very good condition. And we do have some that were designed for 75 miles an hour or more. Now, the point being is the decision to raise the speed limit will be made by ODOT. And I think that this is a reasonable bill, and I agree with Representative Miller that we have a governor who is, I believe, dealing more realistically with what people's behavior is. And with that, I hope that you guys will vote to pass this, not only from this committee to the floor, but also to get it to the governor's desk, because it's a very reasonable bill. Thank you.
Thank you, gentlemen.
If I could add one thing,
certainly,
Mr. Chairman, and that would be when you get into the discussion of the increased speeds or speeds having some, they're usually noted in a citation when there's an accident that speed was involved. Well, one, of course it was. But secondly, don't let those statistics mislead you, because most of the accidents aren't happening on the freeways that this bill pretty much is directed at. They're happening in secondary roads, the trips to the stores, and so on and so forth, at much lower speeds is where the accidents are happening. And secondly, what is deemed excessive speed, again, unrelated to this particular bill, would be where it is unreasonable in the circumstance, which would be a violation of the basic rule. For example, if you were traveling in a neighborhood, let's say, and it was an icy day, going 25 miles per hour would likely be excessive. And so just again, when somebody brings you a load of statistics that tries to say that increasing this speed will necessarily mean more accidents, it's not true. And it has not been the experience of the other states, 44 of which have adopted higher speeds.
If under the maximum speed limit allowed for trucks under this would be 65.
Correct.
Yet the maximum for cars could be 75. There you have over 10 mile per hour differential there. Would it be reasonable to raise the trucks to a maximum of 70 where you only have the 5?
I would defer again to the judgment, Mr. Chairman and members, of the Department of Transportation after they heard from trucking associations as to what should be the difference between truck speeds and car speeds. My guess is, based on past discussions with the Department of Transportation, that you would see a posting more like 70 miles per hour on freeways, and so if the trucks were at 65, maybe that's the condition we'd find ourselves in.
Okay. You bring the cars down to get it within.
Well, again, this is an allowable maximum that I would not in the near term, unless there's, I think one map I saw a couple of years ago, there was a little stretch of highway near Vail, I think it was, where between Vail and Idaho, where for just a few miles, I think they said 75 would probably be okay here. But the highest number I saw posted for the rest of the interstate system was 70. But that was their preliminary map. They were comfortable with it. As Senator George points out, and I grew up in this state, it used to be posted 70 on I-5 and I think 75 in some other stretches when our cars weren't nearly as well equipped to handle conditions.
Thank you. This would apply, Senator George, please.
Chairman Brown, if I could answer in response to that too. If you'll notice the relating clause in this bill, literally it could be amended if the committee would so choose to put in there that no matter what, the differential between the cars and the trucks would be 5 miles per hour. Now, the interesting thing is right now we still have 10. And we haven't seen any, there's not bodies along the freeway, as we heard earlier. And this is not the Autobahn proposal. And you know, I don't know about you guys, but I've been around this building enough, and maybe I'm getting been here too long, then I'm getting tired of spin. I'd like to deal with the reality. I think that's what this bill does. It deals with reality. And so, but if the committee would so choose, I would think that would be reasonable to say, even today, if it's 65, then would trucks will be allowed to go 60? Because I guarantee you, as Representative Miller pointed out, he only got to pass two trucks on the way down here. There were probably hundreds of them out there. So right now, they're probably maintaining 5 miles an hour, even though it isn't legal.
And this bill would only apply to the interstate system, I-5 and I-84?
At this point, although, Mr. Chairman, my intention is, and I had wished it had been drafted originally this way, and we've gone through this in past sessions, but I will bring you amendments to impact other highways. I think all of us know, again, in our personal experiences, if you've driven, let's say, east on Highway 26, that's 22 out here, but 26 up there, going eastbound between, let's say, the east side of Government Camp and Madras. To have that posting be a maximum 55, again, ignores reality. Keeping in mind that we want to retain the basic rules. So posting 65, let's say, on that stretch of road does not permit somebody to drive even 65 if conditions are bad, because that would be a violation of the basic rule. But if you've been out there on a clear day in the summertime, and let's say it's like 8 o'clock in the morning and there's nothing but sagebrush out there with you, again, it offends the common sense of Oregonians to post a number that they absolutely disrespect. So this bill just, again, would allow the Department of Transportation to reflect on reality.
Thank you. Representative Mabry.
I just thank you. I haven't had a chance, Representative Miller, to look at your numbers, but I did look at the other handout. And I only see two states, Arkansas and Indiana, that have the 60, 65, and 65, 70, the five-mile spread between cars and trucks. I find also California and Michigan have 15 mile an hour between trucks, which is, like 55 and 70 for both. But overwhelmingly, there's a number of those that have 65 and 75 or 60 and 70 or those kind of things. But overwhelmingly, they just post a speed limit, not differentiating cars and trucks. Your bill, of course, has 65 for trucks and 55 for cars. 75 for. You know what I'm trying to say. Is it my understanding that you might be interested in having some kind of amendment to this, do you want to stick with those numbers, is what I'm saying?
Well, again, as I would read this, it is permissive with the Department of Transportation. And again, I would also yield to the judgment of this committee as to what the distinction ought to be between truck speed and car speed. You'll have the opportunity to have lots of testimony on that. My chief emphasis has been on the lack of a realistic number posted for the great majority of our drivers, those who are in private vehicles. So I have confidence that you and the Department of Transportation can make a decent judgment on this. I'm sometimes astonished at the opposition to this bill, believing that those who are appointed to the Department of Transportation Commission are so incompetent they can't be asked to deal with this.
Representative Byer.
Yes, Representative Miller. Thank you for being here.
Thank you.
Question, just remind me, I should probably know this. Is this the same type of language that you've used in the past in allowing the department to set the speed? Or was your past language that you were trying to set the speed?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Byer, this certainly tracks with the most recent bill. As a matter of fact, 2 years ago, I asked then-Governor Kitzhaber about this particular bill, and he said, you know, I think we can work out whatever differences we have, and a lot of this was tailored to deal with his concerns. I believe the prior effort, again, that passed both the House and the Senate, was simply one that gave the Department of Transportation the authority to adjust speeds up or down based on their analysis and input from different groups.
And a quick
follow-up.
Thank you. So would you be disappointed if it turned out that the department did not really adjust the speeds?
Well, I'm Mr. Chairman, Representative Beyer, it would be hopefully a product of, again, hearings and their good judgment. I would be surprised if they didn't reflect on reality. I mean, I don't know how you can take your own statistics and see that the average speed Portland to Salem is somewhere in the 70, almost 72. If you get south of Eugene, it's about 74. For them to kind of put their hand over their eyes and say, oh gosh, we're at 65 and we're so safe, and just ignore reality, again, I think invites the disdain of your citizens that you're trying to serve here. So I'm willing to let them make the judgment. I'll be happy to go before that body and try to argue the case. But if they choose something else because maybe we weren't able to finance all of the troopers that we thought were necessary, well, I understand that. But having said that, one of the things I'm doing personally is, as we all are in this, our budget bills, is we're trying to get more troopers on the road. In fact, I've got an additional bill coming out that hopefully will have another financing package to get even more troopers. So I want you to know I believe in enforcing a reasonable speed limit. This is not about just letting them cruise as fast as they want. So thank you.
Senator?
Mr. Chairman, thank you, Chairman Brown. There's something I'd like everyone to think about, too, and that is if you go out on the highway today and you take a look at a truck, I mean, first of all, we're talking almost every truck out there is new generation equipment. We're talking they're all running on radial tires, which puts a significant profile on the highway that was different from the old bias ply, much safer. Many of the new trucks are running an ABS-type system that automatically allows for the maximum braking ability of that truck. You also, in a sense of superior equipment, you're looking at the fact that if you look at a truck at night, particularly where you might say that, well, the speed differential might be important, it looks like a city is out there, you know, because we have all that reflective tape, you know, the red and the silver stripes that reflect. So on the sides, up the back of them, superior lighting that's going on out there. In fact, you've seen some of the new technology bulbs, which are really easy to spot, very clear. The other thing is, look at the automobiles, and Representative Miller made mention of that. The same type of technologies are in our cars. These cars stop in such a tremendously superior manner to say, let's go back to the 50s or 60s or even the 70s automobiles. So we're talking about today a much safer equipment out there. You're also talking about passenger safety in the sense that if anything does go wrong, the chance of survivability in an accident is increased by the equipment that's inside, side impact, front airbags, all of these sort of things that lend itself to a very safe environment for the driver. With those things in mind, it becomes even more reasonable to bring it up. And here again, ODOT, the Department of Transportation, will make that decision based upon that condition and the status of that road relative to an increased speed. So I feel very, very secure in doing that. I also, I would hope that they would consider some of these roads, reflecting the reality of what the speeds people are driving. But I'm comfortable to say that is up to them. And it's up to our stakeholders, like, for example, the Trucking Association, to negotiate also.
Thank you. Representative Greenlee.
Thank you, Representative Miller. Senator George. I understand your suspicion about statistics. I've ever spent much of my life dealing with them. I also think reality and common sense is an important issue. And I was observing this morning, what hasn't improved since 1970 is the drivers, who seem to me to be screwier than ever. And I was cruising over the speed limit in the middle lane today, watching what was going on the left-hand lane. And the cars were driving, I estimated, about 77 miles an hour in the left-hand lane, with about two cars' lengths between them, just sort of tailgating each other at 75 and 77 and watching people weave in and out so they could move three car lengths up in this caravan. And I'm also familiar because I drive north somewhat. I'm familiar with what it's like on the Washington highways. But what I would ask you is, you have this pattern now with people quite ignoring the 65 speed limit and driving what they perceive as a speed that won't get them arrested, about 11 to 12 miles over the speed limit. If we raise that speed limit from 65 to 75, do you think, how would behavior change? Would behavior change? Would they continue to drive 77 and tailgate each other, or would they then move up to 87? What do you imagine would happen with that? I think that's kind of what we're trying to look at, and I think what you're trying to look at as well.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Greenlee, there was one study I was familiar with, and I think it was the state of Washington right after, since they've changed their speed limit, the average speed went up maybe 1 mile per hour, if that. What I think people do is you find what is comfortable and safe. I don't think anybody goes out there trying to be, this will date me, I guess, Mario Andretti or Jeff Gordon, I guess, is more up to date. But, you know, that's not where we're at. We're not out there trying to endanger ourselves or other people, but you want to drive a reasonable rate of speed. So I would suggest to you that behavior on the highway will not change a great deal, even with the new posting. People are now driving a speed they believe for those conditions is reasonable. My hope is that the signage will reflect that behavior. But I don't think there's this understanding that you're always given a 3, 5, or 7 over the posted number. As a matter of fact, that's why I'm supportive of the enforcement component here. I think it's absolutely appropriate that if we set a speed that we believe is a reasonable, safe speed to drive, that which should not be exceeded routinely, then I absolutely favor enforcement of that number. Which is, I mean, you know, when you drive down a stretch and you see some car parked on the side of the road, some people tend to shape up.
Whatever the speed limit.
Yeah. So I'm just saying it'd be fine with me if we had more authority out there to enforce a reasonable, rational number.
Thank you, Representative Brown. Can I comment on that?
Certainly.
Representative Brown, Representative Greenlee. We had experience last fall to be down in Texas. And first of all, I was very much impressed with their highway system. But the other thing I noticed, and we had four cars that were running around Texas because of this wedding. And then we did some traveling kind of as a unit. Well, in one of the cars was my son-in-law, who was a police officer. And we commented whenever we'd be having a meal or something about the fact that we had noticed that even though the speed limit was, you know, at least 10 above where we are, that you didn't see anyone going much beyond that. And it was enforcement. There were a lot of Texas Rangers down there. But the other thing we noticed was that you didn't feel like you wanted to go faster. And even if you'd been down there for several days, which normally you get acclimated to, you know, what the conditions are, you felt that this was a reasonable and prudent speed. That's what we noticed. You didn't have anyone blowing by going like crazy in Texas. They were all doing about 75. And if it was plus or minus 2 or 3, that's what it was. And so we had all noticed that even though when that limit was up there, they didn't go 7 or 8, 10 beyond that. They stayed right near that speed because that was, in fact, a reasonable speed. And I'm going to tell you, up in the panhandle where we were, there's a lot of places where there's nothing. You would have thought that people would have been laying the hammer down and moving out, but you didn't see that. So I think that'll be reflected here. The other thing is that if ODOT sees that isn't working, they'll just change it and bring it back down. So I think that's an important factor. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Ringgold.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Senator and Representatives. I have a question for Representative Miller, and I'm one of those strange people that try to drive the speed limit. I've seen you whizzing by me on occasion. You sort of see me wazing it, right? But
and I was right behind you.
However, I wanted to follow up on something that you mentioned in your testimony and some of your remarks regarding enforcement, and the concern that I have is given our current fiscal crisis and the fact that we are unfortunately cutting back on enforcement, Do you think this is the right time to be raising this issue, given the fact, and I'll be honest with you, I have some grave concerns about the ability to enforce, because I don't see a lot of state troopers. I mean, I'm going in between mainly Portland and Salem, but I don't see that many state troopers out there when I see a lot of people whizzing by me above the speed limit, and wanted to see what your response is regarding if this is the appropriate time to be, and I know you're not advocating for a speed limit increase, but giving ODOT that authority, I guess I'd like to hear your comments on if you think this is an appropriate time, given the fact that we are so strapped for enforcement with our current fiscal crisis.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Dinkelder. I think this is an appropriate concern to be raised in front of the Department of Transportation. This bill, again, just seeks to allow that department, if after reflection on all of the traffic safety concerns, including the enforcement component, if they believe that there is some stretch of highway where it would be safe to increase that number, given all of the considerations, and that I think that's an authority they should have even now, with the situation as you described, where we don't have all the troopers we used to have. I mean, I think they are able to deal with that particular issue. I think we are. And if the, I mean, there's nothing that would prohibit us as individuals from going over there and either supporting or objecting an increase in some, let's say, very rural eastern Oregon stretch of allowing a posting of 70, even if there are not additional troopers. It may still be reasonable. What I would ask you to consider in this is that the accident statistics continue to show a decline in fatalities, even though there haven't been. In fact, if you go back over the last probably 10, 20 years, there aren't as many state patrol officers as there used to be. But the statistics that will be attempted to be used against this bill actually bear out the fact that it's been safer out there even without all of those additional troopers. So I understand your concern. I'm trying to remedy that as best we can. I think in the bill we'll have on the floor tomorrow, we're going to add back 40, and hopefully we're going to do more than that in the next biennium.
Thank you.
Thank you. It don't look like there's any more questions for the minute. Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you. I appreciate this time very much and your consideration.
Could I have John Tung and Frederick Hackinson come forward, please? Thank you, gentlemen. Whatever order you'd like to start in.
Mr. Chairman, my name is John Tung. I'm an orthopedic surgeon. Told my staff before I came down here that if my patient died, page me, and my beeper just went off 10 minutes ago, so I'm going to have to give my remarks and leave. Thank you for this opportunity to speak. I've been on call this weekend as an orthopedic surgeon, and I see the results of motor vehicle trauma and have for the past 30 years. I share Senator Miller's desire to increase my speed of travel. Unfortunately, I'm aware of, after 20 years of studying traffic safety statistics that he attacked and used simultaneously, the fact that the majority of Oregonians, 62%, oppose raising interstate speeds in Oregon. And ODOT opposes raising speeds in Oregon. I'm the chairman of the Oregon Transportation Safety Committee, and we advise ODOT. I'm also a member of the Speed Zone Review Panel, and we're constantly being asked by cities and counties to reduce posted speeds, not increase them. I think we should celebrate the uniqueness that Oregon has of the record-setting reduction in deaths and injuries on our roadways over the past 5 years. I'm a native Oregonian, and I think Oregonians are very comfortable being first or last on many issues. cars are safer, and we have not increased our speed, so we would expect a reduction. But we've had a record-setting reduction in death and injury over the past 5 years compared to the states around us that have raised their speeds, that have had significant increases in their crashes and their deaths. So the force of a crash increases exponentially with the speed, and the time saved is but a small fraction. House Bill 2501 would lead to incremental increases, Representative Miller believes, in speed limits. As an aside to Representative Cruz's comment, the posted speeds on our interstates are limits in Oregon already. So this would lead to increased speeds, as it has in the other states, and it costs us millions of wasted health care dollars at a time when we're scraping for those, and it will cost a significant loss in economic productivity because the average age of death on the road is 27 and the highest risk age is 18. The years of life lost from roadway death and trauma exceeds that of cancer or heart disease. So we're talking about a major health issue. And at this time, as Representative Miller pointed out, our highway patrol capability is dangerously low. So I speak and have handed out references. These are the loaded statistics that Representative Miller referred to. You notice that all of my statistics include three-year averages, not individual years. I'm not cherry-picking any data. And this is all ODOT referenced material that I have reviewed with Troy Costales, and you can ask him about any of these statistics, whether or not they are valid, as he is staff to our Transportation Safety Committee. I'd also like to speak to the differential in speed, which you discussed earlier. I think that the increase in mass and stopping distances of trucks is a much greater danger at higher speeds than the differentials, and I think that's why Representative Mabry's comments were so appropriate. And I've read safety statistics for a long time. Oregon's truck-related fatalities are overrepresented in terms of their vehicle miles traveled. And 80% of the time when someone dies in a truck collision, it's not the truck driver. So I would be very concerned about raising truck speeds in Oregon. Also, the state speed study done by the police does not show an average speed of 71 miles per hour. All of the speeds are in the 60s if you look at the data. So Oregonians are voting with the polling against this bill, and they're voting with their feet because they're really traveling at distances below what they would consider to be enforceable speed citation levels. State police have talked to me that they have concerns that this bill would have a negative impact on the basic rule, and I would ask you to confer with the state police about their concern on that issue. The reality of the increase in the limited sections of interstates in the state of Washington, where we love to compete with the state of Washington, they had an overall increase of 7% in their deaths after they instituted that. Small increases in average speeds have a significant impact on the deaths. And you notice in one of the handouts that I sent you, I think it's very interesting. I studied what happened to us in September of 87 when we raised our interstate speeds. And there were more deaths on the collector roads next to those interstate roads than there were. I mean, there were additional increases of 56% on our interstates, but there were actually more additional deaths and higher speeds, substantially higher speeds, on the rural collector roads because people become velocitized on the interstate travel, and that sort of sets their thermostat when they turn off onto a road that looks wide open, but it's actually four times more dangerous per vehicle mile traveled. And so the speeds on the interstate in the first few years, as you'll see in my data, increased only 3.5 miles per hour initially on our interstates, but the speeds on the adjacent roads where the signage did not change increased 7 miles per hour. And there were more additional deaths because of that carryover effect than there were on the interstate. So the big 65 speed signs that we have out there are really the big message to our citizenry about what we consider to be a safe speed. And higher speeds will cause or will be a result of higher postings. So I'm full of statistics, but I think my statistics are valid. And when I was 17 years old, I was hit broadside out on Division, and I was in the hospital for 9 days. And I was very close to being one of these statistics. So I look at these numbers as being individuals and people, and I think that that's the way we should look at them and look at them very carefully, because the data is there and the physics haven't changed. The cars are safer, but that safety index with safety belts and airbags and ABS brakes and crumple zones, all of those benefits are tremendously degraded by higher speeds. All of the safety belt statistics that I've used over the years are from crash data at 40-mile-an-hour crashes. So I see the human collision. As an orthopedic surgeon, I ask you to consider my opposition to this bill. Thank you. I'd be happy to answer any questions about my statistics.
Thank you, Doctor. I see you're on the Oregon Speed Zone Review Panel. Is that?
Yes, sir.
Can you tell me what that panel does?
We have the authority to change posted speeds on state roads where statutory authority does not allow a further increase or reduction above statutory levels.
Would that include the interstate too then?
No.
Or not? No. Okay. Thank you. Is there any questions? Representative Greenland.
Sir. Mr. Chair. The 3.5-mile increase that I noted on your statistics, was that with a raise of 5 miles an hour or 10 miles an hour?
10. From 55 to 65.
And if I may follow up?
Follow up.
What do you imagine? You heard me describing the crazy scene I saw this morning with all the wackos driving 77, two car lengths apart. What do you imagine would happen to that scene if the speed limit was raised just 5 miles to 70 miles?
Well, I agree with our former governor and emergency room physician who also has dealt with the human collision, and that is that people would be doing 80 and 85. There's a culture in this state in different sections of the interstate as to what people think is allowable, and I don't think those allowable changes are going to be brought to bear if we raise posted speeds. I think that we have very few troopers. Adding 40 troopers will still put us well below what we had a few years ago. And in 1978, we cut our highway patrol in this state in half. So the perception of enforcement is a big part of dealing with the screwy people that you referred to. And we just don't have the capability to do that now. But I'm more concerned about average speeds and not the scoff laws. And you have to remember that we have the strongest safety belt law in the nation. We're the only state that had to vote it in on ourselves because it failed the legislature here 6 times. But we still have 11% of the population who are not buckled up on the road right now as we're speaking. So when you look at statistics about the 85th percentile, what you're really saying is that the fastest 15% of people on the road that you were with this morning are determining that policy. And that's the policy that engineers will cite when they talk to you about setting speed limits. So the 85th percentile refers to the speed at which 15% of the drivers are above that speed.
Representative Johnner.
Fire had one ahead of me, and then I.
She's going to wait till then.
Oh, okay. As I understand in this bill, John, ODOT would determine in their mind and what speeds. So I guess I'm saying, do you not feel safe with their judgment on the speeds of the highway?
The Traffic Safety Division of ODOT is opposed to this bill. The people of the state of Oregon are comfortable with the 65-mile-an-hour speed limits that we have. And what I believe will happen in reality is that segments of road will have pressure brought to bear locally, politically, by business people who would like to have the speeds raised. And they will go to the Transportation Commission, and they will ask for studies of increase to posted speeds on their section of the interstate near their communities. And what will happen is that we'll have a patchwork of speeds. I drove up here from Ashland last Saturday, and there are sections of the road that are posted 45, 55, as well as 65. And now we'll have speeds of 70, and Representative Miller said 75, he assumes. So we'll have a patchwork. And if you read the Parker study and other traffic safety data, you'll find that people don't watch the speed signs when they keep changing. They assume a certain speed. And the top speed in the back of their minds in the computer that Representative George referred to is really going to have an impact on their perception of what is a safe speed. And so you're setting policy by passing this. And you'll make the transportation commissioners subject to local political pressures. And you won't see sudden changes in fatality rates on a given section of the interstate. But there will be still the carryover effect that I discussed happened in 87, which is an even greater risk and danger. But how you'll change the fatality rates, which are very low per vehicle mile traveled on Oregon roads in a given section, I don't think you'd be able to see a change, and therefore that will be prima facie evidence that this is safe. But in my opinion, of course, that's not the case. We have a very high vehicle mile traveled percentage in Oregon. We're about 8-9% of our vehicle miles traveled are on our interstates, compared to an average nationally of 4%. So it's a major policy decision. If you give that authority, they're going to be subject to pressures that do not allow these kind of public hearings.
Would you like to give your testimony now, sir?
Sir?
Oh, you have a follow-up?
Yeah, is it appropriate to ask for an opinion on another bill that we're looking at, the motorcycle helmet bill?
We're just taking testimony on this bill now. I'm sure that the doctor would probably be willing to answer that afterwards. Well, of course, I understand he's under time squeeze. So.
In 1986, I was a leading spokesperson in favor of the referral, which passed with a 68% support vote. So I'd be happy to talk to you about that later.
Chairman Brown, committee, I'd just like to make a couple of additional statements. First of all, the senator spoke this morning about driving between Wilsonville and Salem, that it was a very fine road, and I have to agree with him. It's probably the best piece of freeway in the state of Oregon. It also has adequate shoulders, adequate lanes, and an adequate surface. But I would like to point out that, back to the Autobahns in Germany, that when you're there at reforger time, which is in the fall, when we move our troops over to West Germany to go out with their tanks, that you'll come around a corner in the Autobahn and find a whole convoy of our heaviest tanks running down the Autobahn at 50 miles an hour with their battle treads on, and not one bit of damage to the surface of the roads, because the surface of the roads there are designed to hold up for up to 100 years. And in fact, the Autobahn between Frankfurt and Mannheim is that was put down by Hitler in the 30s, and is still a very fine piece of highway. However, the concrete is reinforced 1 meter thick, which sits on top of 18 inches of good solid asphalt. So you can imagine the safety of that type of construction. Another thing that was brought up was the speed coming down to Salem today. I ran between 68 and 69. I was passed by three cars only. So Oregonians are kind of sitting there in that high 60s range. I disagree with the 71. And lastly, as far as safety on the highways and whether people are cognizant of what they should be doing, I would like to just bring to the attention of the committee that my daughter was struck by a car on a secondary road back in 1980. The road speed limit was 35. The people that struck her were doing more than that. She nearly lost her leg. She's had 28 surgeries since that time. So I have been very, very specific about teaching my children to stick with the speed limits, and that's what I'm concerned about today.
Thank you. I would imagine the construction costs of building a freeway to that specifications would be horrendous.
I think we pay for it, sir. They were our tanks.
And, you know, interestingly enough, our interstate freeway system was put forth by President Eisenhower, and he based it upon an experience he had had in the 30s in trying to move an army across the United States. And so he pushed the interstate system not to move cars, but to move armies on. But we didn't build them to that specification. Maybe if we had, we wouldn't have all the problem we do with bridges today.
No, sir, we put our tanks on trucks in this country.
Thank you. Any other questions? Thank you, gentlemen, for coming.
Thank you.
Could I have Troy Costales come up, please?
Mr. Chair, while Troy's coming up, we have been submitted a piece of testimony from the Oregon Environmental Council regarding House Bill 2501. Not here to testify, but submit this for the record about the fuel efficiency with the potential speed limit increase.
And Troy, the hearing's open on 2518 and 2501. So.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. That was going to be my question, is which one would you like to start with?
Why don't you start with 2518? That was the one we...
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Troy Costales, manager of the Transmission Safety Division for the Oregon Department of Transportation. Good morning. House Bill 2518 would create speed limits on all roads in Oregon, and it would also specify a default speed limit in the case that there are no signs posted. There was reference to the governor sponsoring a bill that dealt with this issue, and that is not the case. Senate Bill 183, which has passed the Senate Transportation and Economic Development Committee and the Senate floor and is on its way to you, is a cleanup bill for the current speed law. Our current speed law is about 25 pages long, and so Senate Bill 183, which is sponsored through the governor, is a cleanup bill. It does not deal with the same issues that House Bill 2518 deals with. In relationship to House Bill 2518, this would create a uniform speed law all across the state, which right now we don't have. It is a patchwork of violation of the basic rule as well as speed limit. One thing that was not brought up and is rather interesting for those roads that would change from a basic rule to a speed limit, there's 110,000 convictions on driving records in 2001 for people that were cited and convicted of violation of the basic rule. Conversation in court around a basic rule is much longer than it is for a speed limit, because in basic rule, the officer and the accused is talking about the weather, the road condition, their tires, and so on. So something to think about is in relationship to 2518. If we're not able to impact the number of officers that we have on the road, how can we optimize the amount of time that the officers we do have spend on the road? And 2518 would do that. By estimation, using the 110,000 convictions, saving 5 minutes at the scene in relationship to writing up the citation and saving 5 minutes in court, we're talking about 9,150 patrol hours that officers would be able to spend on the road instead of being involved in discussion or presentation of a violation of basic rule. And in addition, because of the court side of it and the issue about having courts not open as long as they should be, this bill potentially using 110,000 as the estimate would save 4,500 person hours in the court system. When we reviewed House Bill 2518, we have one question that's at the bottom of my testimony that we need to check with the Attorney General's Office and Federal Motor Carrier Administration, because in statute we have something called the Serious Traffic Violation Program that relates to violations for commercial driver license holders if they're 15 miles an hour above what the sign says. there's a connection to Oregon getting federal motor carrier safety funds. So we need to make sure that this bill didn't inadvertently impact or change the way that relationship is. And so, we, Mr. Chairman, we just ask and have you note that we're checking to see if that's okay or not. We just haven't had a response back yet on that piece.
And you'll get that information.
Yes, we will. We've asked that question. Currently, overall, speed is now the number one driver-related factor in fatal crashes in Oregon. And in the last 7 years, it's been averaging about 200 fatalities a year related to speed all across the state. The original intent of the basic rule was not to be the primary speed law of this state. It became the primary speed law in this state because of the 1995 repeal of the federal maximum speed law. And what happened by the state not putting in a new speed limit because of our reference to the federal language, basic rule became the rule of the land. And so since 1995, we've been living with basic rule on a majority of our roads, when prior to that they were limits. This bill, House Bill 2518, does have the potential to reduce the number of hours that patrol is spent in writing citations and in court, and also to reduce the hours in the adjudication portion of speed violations. And with that, Mr. Chairman, I'm more than happy to take any questions on 2518.
Any questions? I don't see any, Troy.
Now to the fun one, the big packet you have. House Bill 2501 would, as stated earlier, allow the Department of Transportation to raise speed limits on interstate freeways to a maximum of 75 for cars and 65 for trucks. This bill does not change the posted limits on any other road. And there have been media presentations. In fact, Representative Randy Miller's packet, the article that he clipped on the front, actually talks about changing from bend to burns, which this bill doesn't do that. This bill would only impact I-5, I-84, I-205, 405, 105, and I-82, both urban and rural. This bill creates the interstates as one set of speed law. So for the areas that you currently see as 55, this bill would impact and potentially, and people could request a speed study and traffic study, that the current urban settings of Portland, Salem, Medford, and Eugene could go higher than the current 55 that is posted today. When looking at this bill, what I try to bring forward to you for your deliberations about public risk and potential change is a set of information that is defendable and proven to be accurate. There are only two ways that I know of that you could discern what this bill would do, and that is either to look at Oregon history when we had 70-75 as our speed limits on the rural interstates, or to look towards other states. And what I presented to you on the front of the testimony pages to have you, so you can see in the history of Oregon from 1987 to 2001, which is this last 13 years, on the rural interstate, we're at 65 miles an hour, we've averaged 37 fatalities a year and a little over 1,000 crashes per year of a fatal rate of 0.99. For the 13 years that was on the same roads, when it was 70-75, we averaged 50 fatalities and 1,274 crashes for a fatal rate of 3.78. Just those exact same amount of roads. We're not changing the roads. We're not doing anything different. It's just based on that, those few hundreds of miles of road on the Oregon interstate.
Mr. Chair, could I ask one question? Was the seatbelt law in effect at that time or not, do you know?
Mr. Chairman and Representative Zahner, no, it was not.
Thank you.
And another question, equipment might have a bearing on that also. Huh? You know, that they were still running on bias-cord tires and as opposed to radial, and the braking systems were a great deal different.
That is true, Mr. Chairman, as well. One thing that did not put on my page, which is on the attachment of the Oregon history, the three bars, we've also tripled the number of cars that are on those same roads as well. in the time period from 61 to 73 to today, where we averaged 1,324,000,000 miles of travel on those roads, to where today it's over 4 billion. So it's three times the amount of traffic as well.
Can I ask one more?
Yes.
So traffic fatalities and crashes on miles, total miles driven by all of vehicles, down or up over the years?
Mr. Chairman and Representative's Honor, it is down. During the time of 70-75, it was 3.7. Today it's 1.0.
Okay.
The other way to look at this information is to look at other states that have, since 1995, raised their upper interstate limit. And just not by trying to cherry-pick any of the data, but two of the examples that we were able to get data on from Idaho and from Colorado. In Idaho, since they've raised their interstate speed limit to 75, they're now averaging 46 fatalities a year on the stretches that are 75, almost 3,300 crashes, and a fatality rate of 1.4. It's about 50% higher than our roads, based on the vehicle miles traveled. Colorado, which is a state that we typically look at in relationship to similar population and similar topography and road system, we looked at 10 years of data when they were at 65 miles an hour. They averaged 67 fatalities on their interstates, fatality rate of 1.6. In the last 3 years, where they've been at 75 miles an hour, their average fatalities jumped to 98. Their fatality rate stayed at 1.6. But in part of that, then one of the questions is their vehicle miles traveled skyrocketed as well during that same time. One thing about to point out in relationship to House Bill 2501, in this bill we would retain the reference to the federal maximum speed limit. And as I mentioned earlier, Congress repealed that law in 1995. It doesn't exist. That's part of Senate Bill 183. What we're trying to do is delete all that reference to the federal maximum speed. The issue is that we may have officers using or citing for that law in courts hearing cases relating to that law when it hasn't existed for 8 years. And as Dr. Tung mentioned, Oregon citizens do not agree with raising the 65 mile an hour limit. Attached to my testimony, there's a lot of information, but what I wanted to do is walk you through the packets. The one with all of the percentage numbers on there is when we asked the general population what do they see as an unsafe driving behavior, the number one item that people cite is speeding, and that is for all age groups, for all education levels, and for all areas of the state. The table that puts it in summary form is the first one in the bottom right, says page 8 in this table. You can see for the last 3 years that when asked the open-ended question, what's an unsafe driving behavior that you see on the roads and streets around you, speeding for the last 3 years has been the number one item that they have noted. And the last page of that set, which on the bottom would say page 20, is the one that Dr. Tung commented specifically to. For the last 7 years, we've asked the question, currently on rural interstate highways, the speed limit for passenger cars is 65 miles per hour unless a lower speed is posted. Do you favor or oppose raising the speed limit? And for the last 7 years, a majority of the citizens have responded in opposition of raising that limit. And this past year in 2002, it was 62%. Now, the attached information that we gave to you related to that question, because in the 2001 session I got asked, well, is that just in the Willamette Valley or is it a certain age group? I presented to you the data table so you could look at it if you'd like. You know, where is it that there is the opposition? Female population, 75% opposed to raising it, whereas males, it's split 49-49. And then the very last page of the testimony is giving you an indication where in the state of Oregon is the opposition, and oppose is in all five regions of the state, with the strongest opposition being here in Region 2, the Willamette Valley, and also Region 3, which is southern Oregon area. Those are the two strongest pockets in opposition of the 65 limit. As others have said, our interstate system is one of the safest in the United States. With the fact that we have such dramatic changes going on with law enforcement and in relationship to medical services in rural Oregon, speed limit changes may increase the death and injury rate on our roads solely by looking at Oregon history for other states around us. ODOT is concerned about any increase above the current statutory speed limit. We have this last year, as mentioned earlier in the introduction session when you first came as a committee, Oregon has experienced the lowest or the largest decrease in fatalities of the 14 western states, and we are the only state that has not raised our limits above 65 miles an hour. And one last comment to the bill, Mr. Chairman. Section 6 of the bill talks about penalties. I've had law enforcement, traffic engineering, and my own staff look at Section 6 to try and understand what it says, and we have three different opinions of what it means. And so would mention that if you're thinking about if this bill does become law, the fact you have the different people that are supposed to deal with it in law don't agree, that particular section of the bill might need some attention just so we have some clarity around what Section 6 really is intended to do. And with that, Mr. Chairman, I'll try and answer your questions.
Okay. Thank you, Troy. Representative Byer.
Thank you, Chair. My question really has to do with, and it sounded to me like you assume that you would be asked piecemeal to look at different sections of the freeway. I thought maybe this bill said you're supposed to look at the interstate system and determine speeds. So which is it?
Mr. Chairman and Representative Byer, the way the bill reads, there would a community or someone that is interested in a particular section of the interstate that would want to see it raised would raise the issue in question to the local district office or to the regional office and ask them to conduct a speed study in that particular section. There is guidance by the Federal Highway Administration about how long sections should be, because you don't want somebody, you know, basically yo-yo effect of higher speed, lower speed, higher speed, lower speed. You would want to make it flow. So the speed studies would probably take a little bit of time, but it would be in section by section at citizen or local government's request.
A quick follow-up, Chair. This still would not have anything to do with the speed zone review panel. I mean, you said they don't have anything to do with the interstates, but would this become part of their job or remain in ODOT?
Mr. Chairman and Representative Byer, it would take an act, I believe, by the Transportation Commission to designate some responsibility to the speed review panel that is currently held by the Commission. They've delegated some of the work to the speed review panel and held on to some of their own, which is the interstates. So it would have to be delegated to that group by rule. It is not, I don't believe it is in statute, it's by administrative rule.
Thank you.
Any other questions, Representative Donner?
Talking to the people in the survey, did you ask them could you also ask them how fast they currently drive? Not where they'd like the speed limit change, that's fine, but by the way, how fast do you currently drive? Because I sense those people that were doing 75 that I couldn't keep up with this morning coming from Woodburn, a lot of those people don't want the speed limit to be raised, but still they were doing 70 to 75. So could you ask that question sometime?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Honor, we've not asked that question because we do have, and actually it was in Representative Miller's data packet, his very last page. There is speed monitoring stations in the asphalt on the interstate. And so in his last page of his testimony, it does tell you what the average speed is. For instance, around Wilsonville, it's 67.1 for the calendar year of 2002. We've not asked that question, and it's something we probably could use, but I'm not so sure how valid the response would be if they tell us how fast they drive.
Well, another one, a follow-up. You might ask, would they be willing to pay $150 if they were going 70 miles an hour? If they're arrested for doing 70 or 71, would they be? And they might back off of that a little bit. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
So noted. Thank you.
Troy, do you agree that the truck speeds and car speed should only be 5 mile per hour differential?
Mr. Chairman, there are studies that indicate the 5 mile differential is safer due to approaching or passing than the 10 mile an hour speed. However, one of the things to note about trucks is there's a dynamic impact of speed and weight on the infrastructure, such as the bridges. So the higher the speed and the more weight, it actually creates an energy wave through the bridge where the bridge will bounce. That's why the bridges, when they are posted for weight restrictions, they also have a speed restriction, so that when the truck goes over, it's a static weight, versus when you are going faster, the energy actually makes the bridge, it waves through there and make the bridge move. So that would be a concern from an infrastructure side, that if there's a different speed of travel than there is today with trucks, the question would be, what does that do to the infrastructure that I know you are, and the whole legislature is dealing with that question during this session.
Any other questions? Looks like that's it. Thank you.
Okay. Sorry. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Could I have Gail Shibley? And I understand this is former Representative Gail Shipley. Is that right?
Chairman Brown, that's correct. There is life after the legislature. Chairman Brown, members of the committee, it's a pleasure for me to be here this morning. My name is Gail Shibley, and as the administrator of the Office of Public Health Systems in the Department of Human Services, I'm here to testify about the public health impact of increasing speeds in Oregon. I will leave to others to address, of course, the medical impacts, the enforcement impacts, transportation impacts, the environmental impacts. Rather, like to draw your attention specifically to public health and raise this issue for you to include in your deliberations and consideration of this public policy issue. Motor vehicle crashes are, of course, the leading cause of death and disability among Oregonians aged 1 to 24 and a leading cause of death and disability among Oregonians of all ages. 27,000 people were injured in Oregon's roads in 2001. More than half of them, of all traffic fatalities in Oregon are related to speed. And while there has been improvement in engineering and safety pieces in vehicles, the laws of physics haven't changed. And in fact, in high-speed crashes, vehicles are subject to forces so severe that the vehicle structure can't withstand the force of the crash and thus really can't sufficiently protect occupants from serious injury. While the performance of restraint systems as airbags and safety belts are tremendous improvements, even their efficacy are compromised in high-speed crashes. And because of the limitations of these safety devices, the injuries sustained in high-speed crashes are often severe or fatal. Our data illustrate that speed causes the majority of crashes or contributes to the majority of crashes, and speed increases crash injury severity. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, these are not just statistics. They have very real and significant impact on the Oregon trauma system and the related cost of care for traffic-related crash victims. Our department has statutory responsibility to assure that there is a system that can care for trauma patients, because we are aware that increases in speed limits increases speeds, which also increases the number of crashes and the severity of injuries sustained. The department is concerned that an increase in limits will increase the burden of providing care to trauma patients in what is a quite fragile trauma care system in our state. In 2001, the last year for which we have data, the system of designated trauma hospitals and ambulance agencies provided care for 7,367 trauma patients, 4,097 of whom were injured in traffic-related incidents. In addition to the human and financial cost, this cost of trauma-related care has a very negative impact throughout our state. The costs include the initial transport to the trauma hospital, the care provided by the trauma hospital, and then the interfacility transport costs, as well as those costs incurred at a higher level of trauma care should a higher, more extensive level of trauma care be necessary. The approximate cost of this care for traffic-related injuries in 2001 exceeds $60 million. for the more critically injured patients in Oregon. Approximately half that amount is charged to the Office of Medical Assistance Programs, $30 million. Accessibility to trauma care is an issue in any rural state. The gold standard for care is to provide definitive trauma care to critically injured patients within the first hour of injury, but the further a crash occurs from an urban setting, the less likely it is that critical care will be available within those first critical 60 minutes. More than half of all rural patients are still in the ambulance after the first hour has passed, and for many rural patients, it can take more than 250 minutes from the time they are transported to an initial facility and receive acute care, triage there, and then transported to a level 1 or level 2 trauma center. Again, in 2001, 3,256 patients met criteria to be triaged to one of our 44 trauma hospitals. Of this number, 412 people sustained injuries that exceeded the capabilities of that hospital and thus were transferred to a hospital that could provide a higher level of care. An increase in the number of crashes at high speeds that results from increased speed limits will increase the number of critically injured passengers who must be transported to advanced levels of care. This increases and will increase the burden to our trauma care center and threaten the lives of Oregonians and others traveling on our highways. Unfortunately, the reimbursement rate for the ambulances and the hospitals involved in caring for these patients is only about 50 cents on the dollar. An example of what this means to an ambulance service is the average cost of $7,000 for a helicopter flight. However, the Office of Medical Assistance Program has a cap of $2,900 for all helicopter flights, no matter the distance or the level of care provided. Ground ambulance transports average $700 per transport and are reimbursed at approximately $462, or about two-thirds of the cost. Trauma hospitals are also greatly impacted by the cost of care for trauma patients with severe injuries. We estimate that the public cost for caring for traffic-related trauma is approximately $30 million, while the hospitals are reimbursed for less than half that amount for caring for these patients. Thus, the science of injury prevention enables us to predict how crashes occur and what measures will reduce the burden of injury. Applying the science to speed limits brings these conclusions. Increasing speed limits will increase speed. Increasing speed limits will result in more crashes. Increasing speed limits will result in more serious injury and death among crash victims. And increasing speed limits will result in increased costs to the Office of Medical Assistance Programs, to ambulance centers, and to trauma hospitals. In addition to the human implications, thus, of death and serious injury, at this time when the state budget is so stressed, we cannot responsibly support measures that will increase costs to taxpayers and our service delivery system. We urge you to vote no on increasing speed limits in Oregon. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd be happy to try to answer questions.
Thank you. Questions, Gail? Representative's honor.
Mr. Chair. Gail, if we increase the speed limits but everybody just drove the way they did today, would the accidents increase? Would any statistics change?
Mr. Chair, Representative Zahner, I'm not sure I could engage in a hypothetical piece of that. I'm talking merely in terms of what is the cost of providing medical care in Oregon. Based on the research, the increasing limits increases speeds, increases the number and the severity of crashes, which increases the cost to our public health system.
Because this morning when I came to work from Woodburn, everyone was over 70. They drove over 70 miles an hour. So if the sign was different, but everybody still drove at 70 miles an hour, the statistics wouldn't change. It couldn't change, could they?
Mr. Chair, Representative Zahner, I appreciate your concern on this. I can't answer specifically to the signage issue. I'm talking about, based on the research that's provided not only here in this state but nationally as well, in terms of when you increase speeds, then you increase the number and severity of crashes, and what is the impact from our shop for on the public health and safety of Oregonians and others traveling on our roadways.
Any other questions? Thank you, Gail. Appreciate the testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Could I have Jeff Boley and Eugene Lubinsky? We'll start with you, Eugene.
My name is Eugene Lubinsky, and I live in Portland for the last 7 years. I majored in computer science. I have a master's degree in computer science, and my hobby is psychology. So I will be able to address the concern of this computer. What happens inside this computer, among other things. So I would like to start with telling some things regarding previous people who were testifying previously, some of the things that I think of. First of all, I have seen, I'm a member of the National Motorist Association, and I have seen the statistics that only 2% of the accidents happens on the freeways. So obviously, when they bring a statistics about death, as you have noticed, only out of more than 200 people, only 37 were killed on the freeways. Most were killed on the streets, and those proposals are not talking about increasing speeds on the streets. The other thing, speaking from the point of psychology, I am probably one of the youngest people here, so I still, even though my memory is not really good, I still remember how I was studying driving. And I remember that initially I was comfortable at the speed of 15 miles an hour. Then I was comfortable at 25, then 35. And after that, I went to the freeway and was okay. And the reason for that is that as some of the people told that when the lanes narrow, the speeds go down. This is because the speed you are driving is mostly affected by the speed of the, by the, your perception of how terrain changes. So this is why when you drive in the forest, you will drive slower than if you drive in the field. And recently I was returning from Corvallis on I-5 where the speed limit was 65, and I drove 55 because I was tired. When I was going to Corvallis, I drove 75 looking for officers. One very important thing about safety is that safety is not about speed. Safety is about abilities of controlling the car and attention. And when you drive over the speed limit, it invites you to look for officers because nobody wants to get a ticket at an insurance surcharge. So you actually are driving less safe than if you drive with the same speed that is legal, when it is legal. Because when you drive at the same speed, you pay more attention to your driving. When I drive, I rarely look at the speedometer. I look at the road and the road conditions. Another thing that I wanted to ask Dr. Tong, he tells that there are people who would drive like 10 miles over the speed limit. I would like to ask him a question. If there would be a speed limit of 100 miles an hour, would he drive 110 or so? So I would say that the speed people are driving does not... It depends on speed limit because people don't want to get tickets. But usually when I see the lower speed limit posted, it just gets my attention that this is might be more dangerous area, and it will make me slow down because my computer will process it as a signal. But I have seen the statistics, and Oregon has 3.2 million people, right? And only a few hundred of murderers. There are like a few thousand of rapists, burglars, thieves. It means that those crimes are committed only by the very minor part of the population. And thus, the laws that separate the lawbreakers from the honest citizens are valid because they reflect the people's preference. Studies that were made before 1973 show that at the 75 miles per hour interstate speed limits, they have 90% or better percent of compliance with the speed limit. 70 miles per hour limit has 80% level of compliance, and 65 miles per hour limit has the effect of 60 to 70 drivers obeying it. For comparison, the study made by the state of New York in 1994 has shown that with 55 miles per hour limit, you have only 4% level of compliance. So look at the Oregon's current limit. Even if we don't take like any personal testimony that, when I go 65, everybody passes me. 65 means that 30 to 40% of the driving population can be defined as criminals. What kind of democracy it is? As you have noticed, I have an accent. I am originally from the Soviet Union, and the legal system there was like that. There are laws, and pretty much everybody violates them, and the authorities just choose whom to arrest. I don't think that such a system is a good system, and so the speed limits should reflect what the people actually are driving. And now I would like to I want to address the issues. Actually, one of the things I would say that about the governor and his willingness to sign this, not to veto this bill, Representative Miller sold his plane, so he will need to commute through the same freeways as us mere mortals. So he will be for this bill, probably. But the thing that I wanted to tell, I too drove on German autobahns. And besides, I didn't live in Germany, but I visited my classmate who lives in Munich, and I had visited him two times, and one of the times I had a trip from Paris to Munich and back. It was in May of 99. There was no speed limits on the autobahn. On the French highway, there was about 80 to 85 miles an hour, 130 kilometers per hour. There were no bodies. And another thing that my classmate warned me about is the real reason why autobahns are much safer than highways here. He strictly warned me that autobahns have lane discipline laws. It means that if you are not passing, you move right. And this is strictly enforced, and this creates a good driving habit for the people. For example, the representative of the trucking industry representative of the ODOT was telling about fatalities in the truck-to-car collisions. Significant portion of those could be avoided if everybody would drove their lane. Because which driver is the most dangerous on the multi-lane highway? The one who drives like that. But the real reason why they drive like that is because the left lane is usually blocked by the slower vehicles. I had a really interesting experience when I was returning from Munich to Paris. In France, the road was pretty empty. There were only several trucks driving, and I was going much faster than the speed limit. And I was passing all of them, and I was staying in the left lane. And I have noticed that after I pass a truck, it blinks me with his headlights. When I started, even the road, there was no cars, even when after I started moving to the right lane after passing, and it was two lane in one direction, after I started moving to right, the blinking stopped. So this way, everybody there, I wouldn't use the term enforces, but promotes the safe driving habits. So my feeling is that the Bill 2501 needs to be passed, but also included into it needs this lane discipline laws. From what I have read in the American publications, there are two states in the U.S., and I don't know which ones are there, but the people from ODOT probably knows, that already have those laws, lane discipline laws. I think, I don't know which who told it, that the whole is bigger than the sum of its parts. But this is true, especially true on the highways, because this is a culture of individualists, much more than, like, for example, Soviet Union. But and the road is road safety is an ultimate team play. So the enforcement should be not on the individuals who drive faster than speed limits, but on the ones who create unsafe situations, like, for example, tailgaters or those who left lane, who are called left lane bandits. So if those laws will be accepted, if you will bring lane courtesy or lane discipline laws, it will alone reduce the fatalities amount of collisions, because if everybody drives in their lane, it's much safer. But if you combine it with a reasonable speed limit, this will be the thing that will move Oregon into the 21st century.
Thank you, Eugene. We're going to run out of time here very shortly, so I need to move on. Jeff, could I get you to give your testimony, please?
Certainly, Chairman Brown. My name's Jeff Boley. I'm here on behalf of the National Motorist Association. But just on a personal note, I practiced law for 30 years, retired about 5 years ago. And in my retirement, I've been trying to get involved in various issues that I think are of importance to the public. And in that capacity, I have studied pretty extensively what the situation is regarding traffic safety. And I was pretty surprised the more I looked into it. I want to make absolutely clear what my objective is and what the objective of the National Motorist Association is, and that is highway safety. That is clearly the number one objective. And so everything that was being testified to regarding keeping the number of visits to the emergency room down, we're totally in favor of that. Where I think there is the disconnect is the correlation between a posted speed and actual behavior. And I don't think there's any question. The studies are overwhelming, and I would be more than happy to provide you with as many as you want that prove beyond question that the posted speed is basically irrelevant to motorist behavior. People will drive the same speed regardless of what is posted. And so that means that when you, whatever you put it at, what people do is use their common sense. They take everything into account. They drive at a speed which is safe and reasonable for the conditions. Sure, there are going to be the occasional, very rare scofflaw those people should be dealt with accordingly. But the vast majority of people drive safely and responsibly, and they're going to do that regardless. Now, what happens if, you know, a poll was cited? Well, it was alluded to, I believe, by Representative Zahner. Isn't the real poll the behavior? If people are consistently driving at a particular speed, isn't that the real meaningful vote? And I also know enough about polling that if you tell me the result you want to get, I can fashion the poll and I can get you that. You know. So a great deal depends upon exactly how the question is presented. I don't put much credibility in that, but I put an awful lot of credibility in the de facto behavior of hundreds of thousands of Oregonians every day on a consistent basis. And what that behavior demonstrates is that the average speed on our freeways is about 67. But what I think is the most really telling when I really get into studying it is there an objectively safe speed? And it turns out that there is, and there's a way of verifying it, and there's highway engineers that make a living out of determining this. And what numerous studies, countless studies, have proven over and over and over again is that the safest speed is the speed that is being driven by the 85th percentile driver. That's where 85% of the cars are going slower. That is, as a scientific fact, that is the safest speed. So, and this is so true that the federal government has adopted this criteria for establishing the safest speed. It mandates an engineering study. The engineering study looks at what is the 85th percentile speed after actually surveying what happens in that particular place, takes in all the other factors, and then sets a speed based on that. That's what federal law requires if you're going to set a speed. Federal law also, therefore, is recognizing that the place that you start is actual human behavior. You begin with that, and then you adjust the rules to fit that rather than the other way around, recognizing that people do have common sense and that people do have a survival instinct and that they're going to do what's in their best interest. I completely agree with Dr. Tung in terms of what he's trying to accomplish. Absolutely. My objective is the same as his. I want as few accidents as possible. However, I very much disagree with what I believe is his unsubstantiated assertion that that if there is an increase in the posted speed, that means that there's going to be more accidents. Because, in fact, the statistics show exactly the opposite, and they're overwhelming. And I'd particularly like to call your attention to this chart that was shown to you regarding what happened with speeds between 1961 and 2001. And that particular witness harkened back to what happened when the speed limit was 70 up until 1973. What he didn't point out is if you look to the period between 74 and 86 and compare that with the recent period, 87 to 2001, that in fact what's happened when the speed limit went from 55 up to 65, when it went up 10 miles an hour, what we had was a 33% decline in crashes per mile. It went from 0.40 down to 0.29. And what we also had was a substantial, of about the same amount, decrease in fatalities. It went from 1.35 down to 0.99. And this is recent history. It's right here. It's what happened when the speed limit went up by 10 miles an hour. The death and accident rate comes down by about 35%. So I think that these figures actually make a much more compelling case for the fact that that the increase doesn't result in what they predict. And I'd also like to call your attention to a study that was just done by the New Jersey Department of Transportation. They were so afraid that if they raised their speed limit from 55 to 65, that there'd be carnage, that what they did is they said, okay, we're going to do it conditionally in a few places. And when we do that, we're going to make sure that we study that very, very carefully to see exactly what happened. So that's what they did. And they ended up with a incredibly detailed study. And I've got it if you want to see it. It went for 3 years, and it finished in 2001. And what happened, as what they found, is that that increase from 55 to 65 in New Jersey had virtually no effect on the speed that people actually drove, and it had virtually no effect on the death and accident rate. And so they had an answer to Dr. Tung. They actually, because they were, people were asked, well, how can this be? And this is their answer, and I put it in my, it's before you. The answer of the New Jersey Department of Transportation is this. Many advocates for a lower speed limit use the argument that the faster a vehicle is traveling, the greater its potential for an accident, as the distance required to stop is greater. This is only looking at safety from a microscopic view. Highway safety must be viewed from the entire system of traffic flow. The ultimate goal is to achieve more uniform speed in the traffic system, in the traffic stream, which reduces the need for passing and tendency to follow another vehicle too closely. Therefore, a reasonable speed limit, which has credibility with the motoring public, leads to a smoother traffic flow and benefits safety most. Provided in
Mr. Rowley, we're going to run out of time, and I got one more witness I need to hear from. I thank you for your testimony this morning, and I really appreciate it. Thank you, Eugene. Ken Ray, please.
And you're out then.
Hi, Mr. Chairman and remaining members of the committee. Thank you for fitting me in. I want to say for the record I'm here on behalf of myself and not for any particular organization you may be more familiar with me from. I am a citizen and live in Clackamas, as my address states on my testimony. And it takes, every time I come down here, I have to sacrifice half a day's pay at least, so I do appreciate you finding the time to see me. I ask you to vote out of committee House Bill 2501. I think the current law has served its purpose. It needs to be changed. It's a one-size-fits-all philosophy, and I prefer to give the choice to ODOT to reasonably make a decision based on the conditions and citizen input. I trust ODOT. ODOT, I have a lot of respect for. I've seen Department of Transportations in other states, and we have a great Department of Transportation, and I think they'll make wise and prudent choices. The several other pages that are attached to my testimony are a reprint of a Federal Highway Administration study. The full is 84 pages long, so I provided the synopsis. And it shows that when speed limits were changed, and this was a study that was done, the years are stated here, 85 through 92, that changing speed limits had almost no effect on actual speeds traveled. And so the questions that were asked earlier, which was, would everybody just automatically raise their driving behavior by the amount of the speed change, that hasn't been the case. And the amount was less than 2 miles per hour that there was actually a difference when 10 miles an hour was raised on the speed. The 85th percentile that was mentioned earlier is a reasonable way to set speed, and I'm not sure why ODOT has in the past opposed setting it that way, but it works for other states. It also mimics human behavior. It's quite obvious that most motorists choose to travel faster than the current speed limits, and to what purpose do we perpetuate a law that people have such contempt for? I don't care what people say publicly, because we all know about the double standards when people speak publicly. How they're driving is the real vote, as somebody said earlier. Since good science indicates people will obey the speed limit if it's reasonable, I ask you to side with science and human nature and pass 2501 with a due pass recommendation. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ken. I appreciate your patience today with us. Committee, we'll close the hearing on 2501, 2518, and 2514. And we have a draft 3392 that we'd like to enter as a committee bill, and the chair so moves. Is there any discussion or objection? Hearing none, so done. And we are adjourned, and we can make to the floor.